Professor, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
And I think the most formal thing about this podcast is when we start it and when we end it, like everything in between, it's a crapshoot.
Pretty much. If you're new here, wow, welcome. Secondly, what we do is we have a little something called Smack Talk, which is a bit like Car Talk, which you wouldn't know unless you're around my age, where it's like, you know, almost like a talk show, except you don't get to call in. It's just me and Pete kind of chatting. When this first started, it helped planners feel like they weren't alone. And that was the number one thing, right? Church planners feel alone and they don't know what to do. So that's what this show's about. We don't want you to feel alone. So welcome to Smack Talk. And then about halfway through, we get into the what you do part.
Did you see the post that I shared yesterday on Facebook?
No.
I put, clearly I don't take criticism well, I tagged you in it. So it was from 7 years ago. It was, remember when we had the screenshot of like all of our reviews on the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
And they're all like mostly 5 stars. And then there's like one guy who wrote 2 stars and I put next to him, never launched. And then another guy, what did he put? He put 4 stars. I go, meant to tap 5. I guess this, another guy, he put us down for 2 stars. I go, failed church planner.
Oh, man. I had a 2-star review and everybody else is getting mad about it. People are texting me, who's this bonehead that left you a 2-star review of your book? Like, I don't care whether you're in the genre or out of the genre. This guy clearly was not a Christian. He's reviewing Amazon books for money.
Right.
And so he's on there and he's like an independent reviewer and he just completely missed the point of the book. But what's rad is I got a young guy named Ben on my team now and he does our social marketing. He's like, even the haters get what the book is. He took a screenshot of it. And then he put, you know, he gets it. It's a system. It's not just a book. So he highlighted this one part of the guy's review. It was great, dude.
Dude, why are all these pictures of people holding your book?
I didn't ask for that. I mean, that's great, though. It makes a review better. If you put a picture in it, it kind of highlights.
Then you really bought the book. Like, people know.
Yeah, man. Pretty cool.
Man, you got 126 reviews so far.
Dude. That's insane. If you guys are listening and you heeded the call to go on there and review the book, thank you so much. Like, honestly, I said that was the biggest thing you could do to thank me. And, you know, but if you didn't, like Conan said to Crom when he sprang, to hell with you then. Just teasing. I don't really feel that about you. But for those of you that did do that, like, honestly, amazing. I cannot thank you enough. You guys did that. Helps bump our algorithm up on Amazon. Book is doing well. So the book, by the way, is Discipology. Our topic today will be solving the problem that Discipology creates. But for Smack Talk, I mean, what you got, Pete?
So, all right. You know I'm trying to sell my house.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I really want someone to come buy it. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking about moving to the Dallas area, Plano, Texas, hey, I got a great house for you. You're going to love this thing. And we're just, the only reason why we're moving is because we want to get a little land under our feet. And oh my gosh, do you hear my dogs going crazy?
Boy, are my dogs barking.
Oh my gosh, dude.
I don't hear it.
Dude, hold on. This is nuts. This is nuts. Not at all! Oh my gosh, dude, they're going crazy. My freaking dog sees one dog outside and she's just got to like, I'm the boss. And then, of course, the new dog's like, well, I got to bark too. But how does he bark? He barks like, ah.
It's the best beat with dogs, man. Like, oh. The psychology of dogs is the funniest freaking thing. So a mailman comes up, he starts to stick the mail through your mailbox. and the dog gets startled, right? Because they have hypersensitive hearing. They bark. The mailman goes away and he goes, oh, see, I saved you again. And it just repeats. So every time the dog hears that again, thinks, there's that threat again that I chased away. And then the mailman leaves and he goes, see? And your dog is thinking, this is why he feeds me. This is why he pets me. Like, obviously, I keep this place safe. And the same with dogs. Like, when dogs are walking by your house, they're like, oh, you know, I'm going to save you again. That we don't know what that dog's up to, right? Like, it's the best. The psychology of dogs is hilarious.
Yeah. So, anyway. So we're trying to sell our house. And so we had this guy. So yesterday we lowered the price, right? And I get this call from this agent. He's asked me questions about it. And he clearly read the note that I wrote and stuck it with the house. So like there's like a, what you see on Zillow and realtor.com, like there's an agent area and they can see other documents and stuff like that. So I posted a letter in there, basically explaining everything we've done to the house, how good of a house it is, great neighborhood, the whole deal, right? So he's asking me about, and he's clearly read it because the questions that he's asking. And then he goes, yeah, well, I'm gonna make an appointment, come out there and see it tomorrow morning, and hopefully we can write up an offer tomorrow. And I'm like, sweet, dude. Like, I'm stoked, right? So this morning I wake up and I look at my phone, you know. And the first thing I see is the showing's been canceled. And the reason was like buyer's not interested or something. Obviously, I was talking to the agent, right? So whatever, the buyer just wasn't interested. No big deal. But I'm like, oh, man, so bummed, right? Because I want to get this stinking home sold. Well, then as I'm going through my emails, now this is a part that you may not understand, but there's a few listeners out there that are going to understand. I finally got my ATF approvals for my two short barrel rifles. And I was all happy again. I was like, so what? That no one came to buy my house. I got two more short barrel rifles in the old arsenal. Woohoo!
Yeah, I always wonder to myself, like how much is enough?
There is no enough.
Do you think, honestly, like, do you ever think you'll get to a point where you're like, all right, my stockpile's loaded, I'm good?
No, the technical answer is, and in all honesty, the technical answer is you have to have enough guns for every adult in the household, with a minimum of two each, a rifle and a handgun. And then, you know, as your kids get older, you need to have at least something for them as well. Usually a bolt action rifle, something like that. That's the technical answer. But I say that's still kind of low. I don't think that's enough. I think that's scraping the bottom of the barrel. That's what we call a C student. I did just enough to pass the class, but not to really excel.
Okay. Well, I mean, I have as many guns as I can hold in each hand. That's my... Although
that's not
I
enough.
Have to hold a shotgun in one and then, you know, my pistol in the other. That's it. That's all I got.
That's not enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty much aware that if the zombie apocalypse happens, I'm doomed. Or if like suddenly everything, you know, shuts down, the Terminators come, AI takes over, I'm pretty sure that. Yeah, no, I'll last 2 minutes.
You're pretty sure you're toast?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm toast, which is cool because I know Jesus, and I'm pretty sure that there's worse ways to go. There's better ways to go too, though. Do you ever think about martyrdom?
Do you ever read about martyrs it?
And you just wonder, like, dude, like, I saw this picture of Bartholomew, and church tradition says that Bartholomew, that he got skinned alive. Like, that's terrible, dude. Like, there's bad ways to go. But you just think to myself, you know, you think to yourself, like, in America, we spend so much time thinking about ways not to die. And these guys were like, they just knew, like, yeah, I'm probably going to die for Jesus. You know, probably going to have to martyr, lay my life down for the Lord. That's crazy.
It is.
And this icon was like painted in like, I don't remember, it's somewhere in like Eastern Europe during the 1300s. And it was horrific. I mean, even like this little icon made of him was just terrifying, you know, because they depict it and his skin's all like hanging off him, like half of the skin, like they cut half and the other part of him looks like something out of Hellraiser, you know. It's pretty bad. I don't know why that took such a dark turn, Pete. But
I don't know either.
I mean, we were talking about guns. It was all fun and happy with Pete when he was talking about guns. But no, when Peyton talks about death.
When I was in college, I used to love watching horror movies like Hellraiser and all the others. And I tell my wife all the time, she turned me into a wuss because I can't stomach those anymore. Like, I can't do it. I can't watch them.
Yeah.
I've been ruined.
Yeah. Well, hey, you got anything else or should we just get back into it? I don't really have anything. I mean, let's see. Through the Word, we are launching Discipology in June.
Wait, what does that mean?
Well, okay, so it's on there right
because
now.
This is going to become like freaking Jump School, I swear, dude.
Is it?
People who, you just said we're launching Discipology in June. That makes no sense. Because how do I get to Discipology? I go to the stinking Through the Word app. What do you mean you're it's already there?
So here's the thing. It's there. Okay. So let me put it this way.
Yes.
It's like there's two separate worlds. Please enlighten us. There's two separate worlds.
Okay.
There's,
for the new listeners who don't understand what Peyton likes to do, he really loved the term jump school, and every freaking program, book, note he came out with for 10 years, he called jump school. And then he's trying to have a conversation with people and be like, well, this is in jump school. They go, well, which jump school? Jump school one, jump school two. No, there's only one jump school.
Only it, Pete said
there's
that.
A million of them. And now he's doing the same thing with Discipology.
Don't believe Pete's false narrative.
It's not false. It's the truth.
I admit, when we started Jump School the Musical, then people got a little concerned, but that was mainly because they had never seen Pete in tights before. But man, was he fantastic. You brought the house down. You got to admit.
All I can think of is the movie I was in and how much crap you've given me over the years.
Go on,
that.
Tell us about the movie you were in, Pete. What was it about?
Not going back.
It was a bicycle movie. There was more, though. What was it about that movie?
I never actually watched the movie that I was in.
But we watched that clip a few times, didn't we?
We did. So what was the chick's name? Leah Thompson? Is that who it was? Who was the main?
Oh, was it? I think so. Gosh,
it was somebody
been a long time.
Who's the main actress?
I mean, it's cool that you were in a movie with Leah Thompson. Let's just leave it there.
Wasn't that who it was? I think it was called The Unknown Cyclist or something.
don't say the movie title.
I'm just saying.
People are going to look it up and they're going to get the wrong idea.
Hey, I'm just saying when you're asked to be in a movie, you're not necessarily told anything about the movie. And I was an extra. I was in the background. I never even had a script. I have no idea. I had no idea at the time what the movie's about. And I still don't know. I've never watched it.
We need to watch it. Don't you think next time I come to Texas, we need to just watch it on your big screen?
No.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, but okay. So here's the thing. I got two worlds and I walk in both of them, right? Like I've got this new breed, church plantology, church planning podcast. I got all those in there, right? It's like the mission part of my life. Then I have this other world, which is like Bible teaching. And that's through the Word. And the weird thing is these worlds have never really come together, right? Like the people in the church planning and disciple making world didn't really know that I did stuff for Through the Word. Then the Through the Word people don't really know that I'm this author and, you know, I do podcasts and, you know, teach on missions and what have you. So these worlds have always, like, they don't even know that I have a thing called New Breed. So these two worlds have been separate. Well, we finally kind of pierced the veil, right? Like we broke through the barrier because the mission side of my life, that audience, when they bought the book, because the book launched on St. Patrick's Day in March, when the book launched, they all found through the word, right? But now the through the word audience, even though the plan, the Discipology plan is on the through the word app, the through the word audience does not know that. You only find it if you've come through the book and you scan one of the QR codes. So in June, we're announcing to the through the word audience, like we're promoting it big time and beyond. Like they're putting a bunch of marketing onto advertising Discipology outside of the app as well. And they currently have a 12 million person reach. But that's like their audience, you know? But if they market even beyond it, it gives the book kind of a big bump. So we're getting ready. Like I sent all my corrections in cause there were errors in the book that, some of them were my fault, but most of them were just errors with, images or like, there's a whole chapter where the, don't tell anybody, where the images are shifted over by ones. You're like, why am I in this section? But the image for what he talked about in the last section is over here. They all shifted. But it's not that big a deal because there's images on almost every page. There's like 200 images and charts and diagrams in that thing. Kind of crazy. So yeah, that's what I mean. But Discipology the musical, I haven't even started thinking about that, Pete.
Okay.
I mean, don't say it like you don't want to get back in those tights again.
Well, I don't know. I got nothing on that.
You seem distracted.
No. Well, yeah, I'm always distracted. I got so much work going on. It's pretty nuts, man. It's nuts. Focus. I can't wait for people to
tune in to K. Payton. Tune your dial in. Pick up my frequency.
Well, what I was telling you last on our last podcast about how AI is changing the game. Oh, dude, man. It's like.
Yeah.
It's
what's going on with that?
Well, I am having whole programs written by AI that would have cost me at this point, it would have cost me probably 10 grand to have the stuff written out and would have taken forever. It did it in a weekend. Like, and far better. I mean, literally far better than any programmer would have done because like AI will brainstorm with me. Well, what if we had this? What if we made it do that? Because I'm telling it, hey, here's my goal. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. And it's nuts, man. So like yesterday I was like, you know what? This would make my life a lot easier. I need a program that'll do this. And I explained everything to AI and it goes, okay, here's what we can do. And it goes, here's the parts that you're saying you want done. But I think you need to have a human do it. Here's why, because of the mistakes that are going to come up. And it like brought up great use cases that I hadn't even walked through in my head. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, it's a small task to have a human do it. And at the same time, I'm sitting there going, I know I can actually use another AI to do the human task. Right? Like that's how nuts it can get. Right. And literally, I turned on the AI and it goes to work. I get up. Go, I don't know. I think I went and got the mail. 15 minutes later, come back in, whole thing's done.
Okay. So, like,
you know, do this, this, that, and it'll launch it.
Let me ask you this.
I could make through the word in a weekend, that entire app. I could remake the whole thing by AI.
It's true. There's actually an AI generated Bible app on, and we've been looking at this. In fact, through the word, the only thing I think that's going to set us apart, and we've been talking about this for a couple years, we're like, hey, we've always known that people were on our six. Like, you know, you had Pastor Mike, the Catholic guy, you had, what's the one, the Hollow app, like those are our competitors, if you put it like that, but they're all from Catholic sources. But we were like, okay, so we got this. You know, and it's a little different. And also, Bible, what's her name? Terry Lee Cobble. Can't remember her name or the name of her thing. Bible something. but and there's primarily women on there. So we've known that we're a little unique in that, you know, A, we're not from a Catholic perspective, although lots of Catholics listen to us. But then we also are 10-minute audio guides of every chapter of the Bible. Whereas like Pastor Mike might cover three chapters. Tara Lee Cobble doesn't really exposit. She gives like maybe a 2 minute of each chapter. Or she'll take again like three chapters. So we knew like we're kind of unique, but here's the thing. Through the Word is sticking to none of this is AI generated. So like there's Bible chat on YouVersion, and it is clearly AI. Like you can just tell by listening to it. It's AI. And so we're actually going to be doing a kind of like a webinar on AI and some of the limitations and why certain things should not be AI. Like you're listen, if you're out there and you're a preacher, we could argue that all preaching in future should not be human. That like if we're going to use the Bible app, for example, that the teaching on the Bible app, we could argue that in future, there's no need for pastors, no need for pastors at all. You only, and by the way, I don't believe this. I will argue strongly against this for theological reasons. But you could argue that in future, all teaching of your church will be AI generated. And you could actually take surveys, AI-driven surveys of your church, and see what people's needs are. The AI could generate what the best sermon would be for everyone in that room, and then it would preach a sermon to everyone in that room. The question is that how God designed? Is that what God wants? And why or why not? These are all things that the church is going to have to wrestle with. AI music, worship generation. You don't need worship leaders anymore. You don't need to meet anymore on a Sunday if that's the case, because now you don't need anything live. So it could all be online digital church, all run by AI. We're going to hit all of this. And the question is, if we're not thinking about it ahead of time, why or why should we not do it? Well, if your church is running a show, this goes back to Church Zero. I talked about all of this in Church Zero, like 2013, wrote a book. It's now called The Unstoppable Church. It's been rewritten. But for the same reasons that I wrote that the church should not be a show with an audience, it should be highly interactive. That's the same reason I would argue against this. If your church is a show, you can replace everything with AI. But if it's an interactive, Holy Spirit incarnated presence of Jesus, then AI will fall radically short. I actually think in many cases, the idea of the beast in Revelation is almost like a cheap substitute. I wonder if the beast may actually be man's creation, man's, because it says it's the number of man and it gives you 666. I have no clue what that means, but I wonder if that's some kind of algorithm. It's interesting to me. It's really interesting to me watching this develop. And I don't want to be that guy that just thinks new technology is of the devil, because the church has always done that. But I do wonder, you know, is there, once you replace the humanity, listen, there is only one thing in all creation made in the image of God. AI is made in the image of man. So if AI is made in the image of man, then we have to wonder if we're made in the image of God and we're indwelt by the Spirit. I mean, God can surely use AI, but AI is not indwelt. There's a reason that God didn't just keep dropping stone tablets from heaven as he carved those stone tablets for Moses on the Mount. There's a reason that he spoke through prophets. He spoke through human beings. Ultimately, his son would incarnate. And then Jesus, this is the other thing. Jesus could have easily just written something for us and given it to us. Instead, he breathed it through his disciples. Men were breathed through. That's where we get the word inspiration. There's something about human beings made in the image of God, indwelt by the Spirit, that is key to why AI should not be the chosen method for ministry?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, so like in our own company, you know, we've got AI doing a lot of stuff for us and it's only going to keep growing, right? But one of the things that we know we need to do to differentiate ourselves from all of our competition is the human factor.
Yeah.
Like, because of what we're doing and how we help our clients, they need to know that they can jump on a Zoom call with a live human and get their questions answered.
Yeah.
Our biggest competitor, he got like $100 million for his company and sold like a portion of it for that. And he put on his own personal Facebook page, "Hey, I just want to thank so many of our clients, you know, for sticking with us and being with, you know," and he was just like that kind of a thing. And then someone on his personal Facebook page responded to him and was like, "Well, if you're really so thankful for us, then why do you give us a useless number that we can never talk to anyone? Why can't we actually talk to a human being?" And like, for someone to like push back on your personal page,
yeah,
and be like, "No, this is crap. You say you appreciate us, but you provide no service to us."
Right. Right.
And really what it is they've locked in their clients, because it's something in business we call the pain of disconnect. The pain of disconnect is too great. Like, they're not getting what they want, but leaving is even a bigger pain to them. So that's why they're not leaving them. And
we're going to hit this in future where,
but what you're talking about though, my point is what you're talking about is that human element. Like, church has to have that human element.
It does. And we've committed to only having that. And just so you know, our latest book was Job, and in Job, we chose to teach that on through the word, through the genre of the text, meaning that if you read Job, many people don't know this, but like, I just got done reading C.S. Lewis's Introduction to Paradise Lost by Milton. And in that, it's like 10 chapters long. He like, it's an audiobook that's like 6-7 hours. So I was listening to it. But he basically said, you know, he talks about the properties of an epic poem. That was their Avengers Endgame. That was their blockbuster movie back then. It was the biggest form of entertainment. And you would have a poet, they would memorize these epic poems like Gilgamesh or Beowulf or, you know, like Milton, same type of thing. And you would memorize it and you would recite it. And there'd usually be music accompanied, you know, you'd gather all your friends, only rich people could afford to hire the poet who's going to come do this. And these were, it's kind of like the Shakespeare of their day, which is the biggest form of entertainment. You would have the poem, and that's why it's more like a drama. Like, if you read a play in high school in your class and everyone was assigned parts and they read it out loud, that's what it would be like. So for Job, it's written in this epic poem form. And the amazing thing is that there's no prescriptive instructions in Job. Doesn't tell you what you should do. You should think like this, you should do this. It just unpacks the story. And it's a conversation between four friends. And then God comes in, Elihu's the fifth. And then God comes in at the end. So six people. What happened was we beta tested this with, you know, number of people. I think it was, can't remember how many, I think it was 85 beta testers or something. And at the end of it, I mean, people were writing in and we were just marveling. Like, we could track, you know, at the beginning, how many thought Job was just really confusing and they never understood it, to the end, how many people are like, "Oh my gosh, this is life-changing. I understand now." But that journey, as we're sharing, it's coming through our lives, our pains, our hurts, you know, like that human component, something AI can't do. AI will pontificate. It will not bring you into the story in quite the same way. And there won't be a human element to it. Like, Chris Langham talks about how his daughter got diagnosed with cancer when we started working through this book. Each one of us had these things that we were going through. and that human quality of it just transformed it and changed it. And it was never prescriptive. It was never just giving you principles. It was taking you through the story. And that's just something that it's hard to explain, but difficult to reproduce. I'll never forget, Walt Disney, as a cartoonist, was once asked, what is the most difficult thing to draw as a cartoonist? And he was sitting there with, the nine old men, and which were the classic illustrators. And he said, sincerity. Sincerity is the hardest thing to draw. If we've cracked that, we've made magic. So how does AI, which is insincere by nature, reproduce sincerity? But it seems like we're actually going into a totally different topic than what I want to go into. So let's get to our point where it's time for this week's topic, Pete.
Great, Scott. It's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty. All right. So the nitty gritty is we're going to talk about the problem that that Disciology creates. I feel like this is like a two-course meal, you know, like you just, you know, you didn't have an appetizer. We just gave you a burrito. Now it's time for tacos. But basically what we're doing is in Disciology, we are teaching you how to activate disciple makers in your church or school, whatever. And we see you as the catalyst. That's what the black book is for, right? Disciology, you know, the art and science of making disciples. And then we have Journey to Disciple Making, which is what we call the white book. It is a journal, but it's actually a fully written book. It's got space for you to record your own journey, but it actually is a book. With a little bit of space to write in, doodle, draw pictures, invent baby names, whatever you want to do. But here's the thing. If you get going on this and you activate disciple makers, let's say that you, let's just say that you're the person, you're the everyday believer, you're not a leader, you're not a catalyst. You just decide, I want to grab my two. Well, what often happens, this is the problem that's created. By the end of it, and this is what we're seeing over and over and over, is, and I warn about this in the book, that this is going to happen. You may not just be a little triad. You, your two, and your who, right? Your two is your number two, your church planning partner, right? It's just one person. We call them, we nickname them the two. So they're your number two. You're number one, they're number two. And then your who is the person that doesn't know Jesus, that you're inviting to follow Jesus with you. So you go through the Gospel of John. Well, the problem is it just keeps growing. We have had multiple people that, like I just saw a picture this weekend. My nephew, Nick, he decided to get his daughter activated. And now they've got a group of like 10 kids that are meeting every week going through this stuff. And it's pretty awesome, but that's like the problem you have is let's say you're like a pastor or a small group leader, and you've got all these small groups, you're the discipleship coordinator at your church, whatever. And for you as a church planner, you know, like, I don't care, like maybe you got a group of 20 and you meet in homes during the week and you all decide, hey, we're going to break up into groups of two in the week. It's not scheduled. It's a lifestyle. The two of you are just big boys and big girls, and you decide that you're going to go through these 28 micro steps, you know, on the Discipology plan on through the word. That's how it works. You go through these. By the end of those 28 steps, you're going to then go for, 24 more steps through 21 chapters of John. Because there's an intro, and chapter one is so big that it's like broken into two parts, and then there's a conclusion. So 24. You're going to do that. By the end of that, you're going to have more than most likely just you, your two, and your who. So when your small group comes back together, 20 is maxed out. So what do you do? Do you, and we've talked about this before, but what do you do when suddenly you've got, let's say, 40 people now in your little church plan? You got all these new believers, or you've got all of these people that still are, they're close, you know, but like you're at the end of the Gospel of John, but you now you got all these people that are part of your, they're meeting, you're in a relationship, they're committed to this. What do you do? What do you, like, what do you, Pete, what would you say would be the thing that you would do?
I don't know. That's why I'm actually kind of intrigued in this because, you know, I reached out to you, I don't know, I think it was yesterday. I'm like, hey, yeah. What's the, where's the link to the online thing? Cause we got a small group that meets in our house. And I was like, all right, we're going to start going through this. At least I was going to propose that to the group. And we are. And so like, we even made a group in the app. And, so I'm like, I have no idea what to do. Cause they're all, cause I thought it was like a 6 week thing. And then they're like, oh, there's 28 of them. I'm like, oh, I guess there's 28. All right, guys, well, we're going to start May 1st. Everyone listen to one each day. And then when we meet on the 11th, which is the next time we're going to meet, I go, we'll just, you know, talk about everything that, that, you know, we've gone through up to that point. So I need to hear, how are we supposed to be running these small groups? I need to hear direct from you because I'm too lazy to go read about it if you've got it written down somewhere.
Well, okay. So here's a one thing that I would say is kind of like a caution. Step one, it's like find your partner. Now, it should be someone in your small group if that's what you're doing, right? They should just grab someone. It is a leader. You could do that the first night. Like, hey, everybody pair up. Do like shirts and skins, you know. Everybody, I'm just teasing. You could do, but you could break them up in your small group that week. But if you, what we're finding is some people are like, dude, it took me like 3 to 5 days. And we're like, well, you start day two then. Day one is the one that's kind of elastic. You start day two when you find your church planning partner, your number two. Like you don't need to worry about I'm behind. No, you just wait on that step. And I think we put a note in there. I think we actually said, hey, go ahead and just wait till you get your two and then just keep going. So but yeah, for those of you that are interested, it's discipology.com. So all you gotta do is go there and it's free. So you don't have to buy the book. We don't want people to feel like they have to buy the book to get started. But okay, so here's the problem is now you got these people. So what we're kind of doing at this point is we're encouraging people not to take the approach that a pastor would take. This is a problem. Pastors are often the bottleneck to multiplication. You wouldn't think that, but there's a reason Jesus didn't just go to leaders, right? He went to a bunch of like fishermen, teenage kids, and grabbed them and said, follow me. I'm going to train you. He didn't have to untrain them. Pastors, if I go to a pastor, what do you think the pastor's solution is for those? Hey, we got 40 people, you know, our small group broke up and now we got 40 people. What should we do? What do you think a pastor's going to say?
I have no idea.
Well, think of the pastor's highest value of what he does. Where is he going to want to put him?
He's going to want to preach.
Yeah. Oh, just invite him to Sunday. They need to be a part of the church now. Well, I'm sorry, but that's like giving them a big beefy burrito in the week. And now you're just telling them, hey, everybody, the main event is chips and salsa. That's what Sunday is. Sunday is the top end of the funnel. It's the lowest point of entry. If we're talking discipology, we're talking teaching. That's teaching. But in your small group, they're getting time and teaching. If you're running discipology, they're getting time, teaching, and they're getting a little bit of tactics now because they've been bringing other people to Jesus as well. So it's going backwards. But that's the pastor's solution to everything. Oh, just invite him to Sunday. Make him a part of the church. No, you got to figure, there's a step before that. You got to figure. I'll just tell a story. When I was in Wales, Alpha Course was all the rage. And think of what Alpha Course was. It was this like 6 to 8 week long thing where you go to dinner at someone's house that you know, and there's like 10 of you there. And, you watch Nikki Gumbel's video, right? First, they start off with a question, teases you off with a question. Then you watch this little 10-minute, 15-minute video. Then afterwards, you have more discussion. You're drinking wine, having cheese, you know, maybe even had a whole meal. A lot of them did meals. And you're having this awesome conversation. And after the hour and a half, you go home. Well, most of the people from Alpha Course, and I remember, like, I was going out to jog one morning, and I was going to church one morning. My neighbor was going to jog, and I'm in the car, and I say, "Hey, you run?" He goes, "Yeah." And I said, "I do too. We should run sometime together." And he goes, "Yeah, no, that's cool. You want to run with me now?" I said, "Oh, I'm heading to church." He goes, "You go to church?" I said, "Yeah, man, I'm actually a pastor." And he goes, "Oh." He goes, "Well, what's your church?" And I said, "Oh, it's called such and such." And he goes, "What's it like?" And I described it. And he goes, "Oh my gosh." He's like, "Me and my wife went to an Alpha course like 6 months ago. And it was just like that. It was like we had food and we interacted and talked. And so we decided we were going to go to church after this thing." And he goes, "You know what happened?" He goes, I can't find a church that's like that." It was a big problem. He was one of thousands of people who felt that.
Yep.
And so, so what did he do? What thousands and thousands of people who went to Alpha did? They just didn't go to church because that's not what they signed up for. Right? So now hear me. Am I knocking Sundays? No. But I think Sunday is the lowest point of entry. It's the lowest. It's the bare minimum. What they got was something so much richer and good and detailed. So what I think that we need to be thinking is, how do we continue more of the same for them? Now, if you have this in place, and this is where Reachology, which will be my next book, cha-ching, that's where that goes. This is kind of like it's small groups on mission, because once you have people in this setting and they're activated and they've been watching other people come to faith and they're new to the faith themselves, you've wrecked them for life. They're going to always crave this. They're actually going to be activated as missionaries from day one. Go back to like Refuge Long Beach, Pete. Like everyone who came to faith became active on mission like right away, right? Because that's how the whole thing was wired. So you've got to figure out, and this is where disciple making turns into discipleship, because they're not the same. And we've talked about this before, but disciple making is basically you're following Jesus, but bringing someone with you. Discipleship is what you do to develop Christians into mature believers, right? New believers into mature believers. Or maybe you're a mature believer, but you want to be a maturer believer. You still need discipleship. But what you actually need is you need people that can lead another group. So you got to figure out, like, it may be that that first group of 20, that a couple of you out of that, you become the leaders. So if, let's say, like, you're 20, you have 10 groups of two people who now...
Okay, this is the first time you've said something about 20. Where'd you just pull that number from?
The average small group in your house
is not 20 people, dude.
Yeah, it can't grow past 20. I'm using the maximum number of people, right?
Okay.
So how big is your small group?
6.
Okay. So you got 6 people. Is that like 3 couples?
Yeah, 3 couples.
Okay. That's really cool. So you guys have plenty of room to grow. But you wouldn't want to grow beyond 20, right? So let's say...
I don't know that we have plenty of room to grow because I don't know where they could sit.
Yeah. So let's picture if each one of your groups of two got one person, then now you have your 6 grew to 9. But let's say you're reaching couples. Now your 6 grew to 12. Okay, let's say you're reaching people and let's say it's mixed. You know, someone just reaches a single person, another person reaches a couple, you know, so now you have some weird number like, I don't know, like 12, right? But one of those groups reaches 4 more. Now you got 16. Now you're kind of full already. See what I'm saying? Like it creates a problem. Because now you're like, do we continue to meet? Like, you could meet 16 people in your living room, right? You could see that.
No, I'm not in my living room. No.
Okay. So what
I'm not kidding when I say we're kind of maxed out at six. Like,
really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, as far as where you're going to sit. Yeah.
I see, but that's brilliant. I love that you're bringing this up. So what would be your solution at that point?
Well, see, I don't know because I'm not the guy that's inviting people. You know me. I don't like people. I'm a massive introvert. Like, that thought is terrifying.
So here's what I think. We keep you doing what you're already good at, which is leading one of those groups, right? What would be the possibility of those other two couples branching off and taking the people that they've been making disciples with and doing what you do?
Oh, 100%, because one of them is the pastor of the church.
Oh, there you go.
So he better be able to.
So there you go. So now you've got three groups, right? And now you got these people. And what you're going to focus on with these new believers for some time is discipleship. So this is kind of where, like, do the word comes in, right? Let's say that you've got somebody says, hey, you know, we'd really like, we like John. I love Chris Langham's approach. Chris Langham always feels like after you've done a gospel and you just met Jesus through a gospel, go through Colossians next. Meet him in glory. Understand what he's doing now. Understand who he is as the exalted, resurrected Lord, right? Not Jesus during his 3 years of ministry. And I love it. So Colossians is that book that shows you who Jesus is in glory. So you get an understanding of who it is you're worshiping, right? So let's say you go through Colossians next. And then as you're going through Colossians, you've got these people are growing in their faith, right? And you could take them, you could continue to take them through books. And they're entering the same rhythms. What you're doing is you're actually giving them quiet times, you know, and devotions, whatever you want to call it. You're teaching them how to be in the Word every day, because through the Word is a discipleship tool, right? It's time teaching, and they stay in those groups where digitally in the app, they're still talking with one another, reading the passage and reflecting on it every day. And then one of the things we're incorporating, because time teaching tactics, we're incorporating into the app is tactics. What do you do about this today? And that could be as simple as just, would the Holy Spirit speak to you? Ralph Moore's three questions. What is the passage saying? What is it saying to you? And what is the Holy Spirit saying to you? And what are you going to do about it? That's time teaching tactics right there. So literally, you now have a discipleship pathway on top of the disciple making. It's a catchment for them. So you're now discipling people through their quiet times. You're not with them while they're reading the scripture, but there's this interaction piece that you have with them to help them develop into mature believers. And when the time is right, and I can't tell you when that is. I mean, when the time is right, you're going to send them on mission. And for Jesus, he trained the 12 for, well, the six for 2 years, and the other six, the 12 total, for another year. So some were trained 2 years, some were trained 1 year. And then at the dawn of the third year, he sends out the 12. 6 months after that, he sends out the 72, which are those who most likely followed Jesus after the 12 were sent out. They were the disciples of the disciples. Wow. So 6 months later. So I can't tell you, but I mean, they were following Jesus 24/7. So could I give you a formula? I mean, if you followed me around 24/7 for 6 months, you might be ready. But I can't tell you when. There's no formula for when a disciple's ready, because the Bible doesn't give us one. It won't give us one, because that's not how it works. You have to assess people's maturity. But I guarantee you, if you were meeting with them every day, for, you know, going through the scripture, and when you're done with Colossians, maybe you say, hey guys, we're going to go through Galatians next, or we're going to tackle an Old Testament book, we're going to go through Genesis together. I'm just telling you, these guys are going to mature, and you are going to be tracking. You're not just leaving them to the wind and hoping they show up every Sunday. So it's disciple making that leads to discipleship. And eventually they are your future leaders, your future small group leaders. You're pouring into them. They know how to do this now. They're mature enough. And that's why for us in discipleship, it's becoming disciples first. Then it's making disciples. Then it's sending disciples. That was Jesus's rhythm. So we're helping them after they come to follow Jesus. We're helping them become disciples, helping them mature. So that's how you solve that problem, man, because you're going to create a problem if you do this. And you got to solve it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember, I don't remember exactly how the story went, but I think Rick Warren was the one who told us this, right? Because that was his big thing with small groups. And he was telling us about this guy who had like a small church, like 20 people in it, right? Church plant. And they started out with a small group, or he asked, who wants to lead a small group? And he had like 14 of them say they'd lead it. And so Rick Warren was like, well, what'd you do? And he goes, we started 14 small groups. Now we got 72 people in the church, right? Because they all invited their friends. And
that's it. That's exactly what happens. And the thing with discipleship is it's nothing new. Like I keep saying this to people. It's kind of like when you see working out, right? Like people are advertising working out and they're like, hey, fatty, you want to get in shape? And you're like scrolling through Instagram. You're like, yeah, I do, but I don't have a plan. I don't know where to start. I don't know how. I know the what, get in shape. I know why, because I'm a fatso, but I don't know how. It's the same with discipleship. We know the Great Commission. We know why, because we're called to this. We're all called to this, but we don't know how. So most Christians get stuck there. This is just a next step, simple, basically workout plan for disciple making. That's all I've given you. And it is very much what Jesus, like it was carefully crafted. And I don't show you the bones in the journal, in the discipleship plan. I don't tell you, well, this is why we're doing this. Because Jesus, that's discipleship. That's the, you know, behind the scenes sneak peek of why everything is the way it is. But for the quick start guide, which is the discipleship plan on Through the Word, that's just to get you going. That's just, you know, so someone says, hey, I don't care about all that. Just help me make disciples. Boom, there you go. And I know for a fact, once people start doing, they start seeing it working and they start seeing it like taking off, they're going to be like, I think I need the discipleship book now. I think I need to understand the anatomy and physiology of this. Like, why is this working so well? Why have I been missing this all my life? Because we've been ignoring what Jesus did all our lives. We were not taught this. And that, guys, is to me, if I die tomorrow, I died knowing I restored this back to the church, the disciple-making way of Jesus. That I can die happy with that. If that's all I did, if everything in my life was leading up to this, to restore this back to the church, to help the church mobilize like Jesus mobilized the disciples, multiplication will take care of itself. Mobilization causes multiplication. But for me, you know, and you and I together, I mean, we skipped straight to multiplication like everyone else did, right? Not realizing the mistake. The difference is on the ground, I've been mobilizing. Like you saw it. It wasn't like, to me, like when church plants fail, I look back and I think, well, because you didn't mobilize people, right? You were trying to do everything. You're trying to gather money and you're focused on just running a show on Sundays. You never mobilized people. And that's why Jesus spent 3 years mobilizing 12 people, because he knew if I do this, I could leave, right? The book of Acts will happen. And that's what this is. And so, you know, the early chapter of discipleship just points all that, like it gives you this formula. Mobilization leads to multiplication. But we put the cart before the horse. And so I'm correcting that now in my ministry. And I just humbly say in the book, like, hey, I got it wrong, you know, like no shame in that. I got it wrong like everyone else did. But you know, when you start paying attention to Jesus, Paul got it wrong too, by the way. Paul started trying to multiply. That's where the Galatians heresy happened. He had to go back. But so you guys, if you've been listening to this podcast, you've heard all this before. So, but anyways, I just want to, pretty much hanging up there, Pete. And if you're doing all this mobilizing, Pete, you don't really have time to do your bookkeeping. I mean, how do you make it work?
You know, it's funny that you should ask that, Mr. Jones, because
it is funny because I ask it every week.
And I use SimplifyChurch.com.
What? I've never heard of that before.
SimplifyChurch.com. They make your life, well, simple.
You know, Pete, when I said that I've never heard of it before, I said it about as sincerely as AI says that. That's excellent. Great point. Good catch, Pete. But SimplifyChurch.com, they're not AI. They're actually real-life humans like Josh Henry and other people I won't name because maybe you won't get them as your specialists. But they are amazing. Their customer service is second to none. They're highly responsive in their emails. You can call them, talk to a real human. And they're just super cool. They're the nicest people, and they understand how to work with churches. They're very well-versed in all the compliance, all of the legal stuff. Everything you got to do. And they'll do so much more than bookkeeping. If you need to start a 501c3, or they'll do all that for you. So they're good.
Yep. I love it. Well, you want to sign us out? Oh, wait, that's my job.
That's your job. Sign us out, Pete.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
And press 1 now.